Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Andrea Gibson identifies as a queer spoken word poet, preferring the pronoun they. Gibson's poetry covers a wide spectrum of topics from gender to love to loss, family, and mental health. Their latest book, Lord of the Butterflies, is also about protest.
Following their reading, I sat down with Andrea Gibson on stage at Boswell Book Company and asked about their first experience with spoken word poetry.
I went to a very Catholic college, and by very, I mean my teachers were monks and nuns, and I went there to play basketball. And my team, we were the Lady Monks. That's how Catholic it was. And I was in the closet all through college, and my senior year, I discovered Ani DiFranco, and there was a track that she had spoken word tracks on, you know, in on her albums, and I had never heard it before. And we had to read our favorite poem to graduate in this one nun's class, actually, and I brought her in, and I just played her album, and that's what I did. And and then I discovered Poetry Slam. A few years later, I moved to New Orleans, then I moved to Denver, and I went to the Denver Poetry Slam, and I just fell in love with it immediately because it was, you know, so many feelings all over the place and also feelings in the direction of hoping to change the world for the better. So I loved it.
What is it about writing prose and the poetic form that feeds you as a writer? Had you ever tried doing, say, short stories or essays or anything like that, or was poetry always your clear path?
It was my clear path just because I want something to get done right away. I never had the patience to write anything longer. I've only just recently, I'm working on a memoir right now, and it's sort of my first time diving into anything longer. But with poetry, I just loved how you could write it, and then it, you know, you didn't have to spend a year writing it. Yeah.
In your poem in this book, Lord of the Butterflies, it's titled, What Do You Think About This Weather? And there's a line that says, your mother used to knit your mittens too big so that you'd kind of grow into them, and that you felt the same way about writing your poems, like they don't fit yet. But now that this is here and tangible in a published book, do you feel that way still? Or is it something that's always constantly changing?
Yeah, well, I just was having such sweet images about my family. You know, when I grew up in a very working class town in rural Maine, and people didn't have a lot of money. So you made your mittens too big so that you could wear them for many years. But I feel that way about poems mostly because I rarely write where I am. I write where I want to be. So my best self is in my poems because I try to write them down and then try to live in that direction. They're sort of like little molds of you know, where I dream to be, especially with hopeful poems or very positive poems. I might be in the most negative space in the world when I'm writing it, and I want to get to a different space or even a more enlightened space. And my poems are wiser than I am by far. I'm a little three-year-old throwing a tantrum a lot of the times. But yeah, I think that this book has been the first book where it's gotten a little bit braver with saying, you know, there's a poem in the book called No Filter where I'm more direct about sucking sometimes. You know, I have this dream of writing a book called Bad Guy, just all about myself, because there's been a way that when you have a platform like this and you're writing about the things that I'm writing about, I get lots of comments and stuff of, you're so wonderful. And that's, you know, because you don't see me when I'm in a bad mood and I'm a jerk or something like that. So I want to write a jerk book someday and sell out all my negative qualities.
Well, I think everyone's a jerk most
of
the time.
Yeah, we all
so.
Are. I mean, that's the thing. We all are. But poets get to present themselves as not a jerk if they want to. And so that's not fair.
So when you're in a bad mood and you're trying to write an uplifting poem, how long does it take you to get in that headspace to get to that, you know, poem of enlightenment or wherever your goal of, I'm here right now, but this poem is going to make me better?
It's usually pretty easy to do because the creative process for me almost always just lifts me into a better space. That's when I'm the happiest. It's when I feel most connected. It's when time just passes like that. I can spend 12 hours in a room writing and it will feel like 10 minutes. I can be on a 5-hour plane ride and can't believe that it's passed so quickly if I'm writing. But yeah, pretty quickly.
Do you prefer to handwrite your poems, or is it mixed depending on what you have at the moment?
I write out loud mostly, I guess, unless I'm on a plane or something. But I write pacing the room, walking around, yelling things, whispering things. If anybody ever walks in on it, it's very awkward. Also, because a lot of the times I don't have the words yet. I just have the sound. I know how I want the poem to sound. And then the words might come later after I know the sound and emotion of the poem. So not only are people walking in on me talking to myself, but they're walking in on me talking to myself and not words. It's something that you really can't pull off with other people around. I actually can write when I'm walking around the streets of like New York City. Nobody cares. There, yeah.
People might be concerned here. If you
yeah. Milwaukee, they might stop and ask
me. Are you okay?
Yeah. In New York, they don't flinch. Yeah.
Well, that kind of touches upon my next question. So there's a cadence to your performances. But if a reader, say, picks up this book as a novice to poetry and sees the format, there's, you know, your quick definition poems, there's poems that are single space, fill up the whole page. Some go from, you know, margin to margin. Are you writing that for your performance cadence, or is it writing it differently for the reader?
I keep getting asked the question about all the forms in the book because they're more creative than any other book that I've done. And that is almost entirely my girlfriend's doing. She's a poet as well. And what we did is we sort of sat down and I would say the poem to her and she would try to capture it. She knows a lot about form. And so she would try to capture how I say the poem to live on the page and the way that she felt like people would read it the way that I say it. I know virtually nothing about form. I hardly paid attention in school. It's not my craft, really. I come to the page sort of accidentally. I didn't ever plan on doing my first book. A publisher contacted me and said, let's make a book. And at that point, I didn't even have poems on my computer. They were just all in my head. And so I had to just start typing them all out and figure out how to put them on a page.
Is that where you were forced to have poetry and spoken word converge? And where do you think they diverge from each other?
Well, I think what's great about recently is that line is really getting blurred. A lot of really successful, talented spoken word artists are now having a lot of success, you know, getting nominated for the National Book Award and stuff. And so people are showing that they can exist in both spaces and exist powerfully and beautifully. So I think that there's not as much separation as there used to be. I think publishers are more inclined to publish spoken word artists. And I think that line is sort of going away. And I also think that traditional page poets are starting to think, oh, maybe I should learn how to read a poem out loud, you know, because I've gone to see some of my favorite page poets read, and it can be boring. And you want to try to figure out how to make your, you know, move your voice in a way so that you're capturing the emotion of your poem, I think.
Do you feel more comfortable on the printed space since you were mostly spoken word, you're memorizing your poems and, you know, having other people's hands in the formatting of your published books, do you feel like you're gaining strength in both areas or learning from each one as you put more printed pieces together?
Yeah, I do think. I think that I'm learning about it. We were talking about it earlier. I love, the one thing I love about the page are line breaks, honestly, because that's something that is, you know, I just love reading in books. And so you can't ever capture it, really, when you're performing a poem out loud. Sometimes I want to stop and tell the audience, did you get that line break there? That was a good line break. But you can't do that.
Do you find that certain subjects lend themselves to either spoken word or poetry more than the other? Are there certain subjects you only want to do without a printed book in front of you?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of poems that are political poems, social justice poems that feel like rally cries or protest poems. I often want to just have those memorized, and because it also makes a difference to me to be able to make eye contact with people. That was one of the things that made me fall in love with spoken word from the beginning, is it felt like this conversation, and I don't think the audience ever really knows how much of the poem they're pulling out of a poet, because, you know, you're talking to people, you're seeing their eyes, and you're responding to how other people are responding emotionally. And you know, it helps when you're in spoken word settings where people are giving a lot of vocal feedback. It helps pull along. But if that's not happening, you want to be able to see people. And when I'm looking at the page, it's hard to do. But just the energy of it, I think energy always just lifts if you're seeing people's eyes.
Where do you think the intersection of poetry and social change meet? Do you think it's a poet's job or anyone of influence to be the people to affect change, or are you simply recording your experience and it happens to be activism? What is it for you?
I think it's different for everybody. I think in this political climate, it's a radical thing to tell the truth when so many lies are being told. So just the simple act of telling the truth, I think, is political. I also think that creating art and making, even if you're writing about flowers, to put beauty into this world right now, to me, is political and radical, because it's such a destructive culture that it's just, you know, it's going up and battling the destruction to make something lovely. For me, I don't necessarily like writing political poems at all. If I had my way, I'd only write love poems, which queer love poems are political in a way, or in every way. But I just enjoy, I just enjoy writing poems that are hopeful and, not to keep saying the word, but lovely and loving and funny. I enjoy writing that sort of stuff. I don't enjoy writing poems like the one about Orlando. I don't enjoy writing that stuff, but that's where the world is, and that I can't not write it.
We do have a sizable crowd here tonight, and, you know, many people would argue that poetry has its fluxes throughout time. You know, we went from, I'm sure, you know, raise of hands, I'm sure a lot of people read, like, the Iliad, Homer, like, epic poetry in high school, and then maybe forgot about it afterwards. But do you feel like prose and poetry are no longer competing as hard, or do you feel like poetry is having a resurgence now?
Whenever people talk about poetry being dead, or I've heard that people aren't buying as many books. I don't know if that's true or not, but I think that's probably true with books of poetry. I feel like poetry is flourishing right now. I think specifically with spoken word and button poetry and how poetry is reaching so many youth and people who don't think that they like poetry coming to poetry readings. When I first started performing, nobody came to poetry readings except poets. And I wanted that to change so much because, you know, people go, we all go to see bands that we love, even if we're not musicians. So I always wondered, why aren't people who aren't writers coming to hear poetry? And so it was my dream, it still is my dream, that all these you know, rock clubs around the world get filled up with poets. And I see that happening. I see all these spoken word artists starting to tour rock clubs and music venues. And I think that they should be in those spaces. And I think it's a testament to just people who don't identify as writers, like, falling in love with poetry. And so I from what I witness, I see it growing. And And more and more young people getting involved. Some of my favorite poets are 20. Yeah.
Do you think it's both the responsibility of poets and, say, people here in the audience to foster that growth?
I mean, I don't know if you can tell anybody it's a responsibility to love what they love. You know, love what you love. You don't like poetry, like, who cares? But I do think that a lot of people don't know that they love poetry. And so if you love poetry, try to, yeah, let's just say sneak it. Give only poetry as Christmas or holiday, as holiday gifts this year. Yeah.
Well, with poetry, people often come to it the first time as an assignment.
Yeah.
Was that the case for you? I mean, you mentioned you brought in your favorite poet to play for your English teacher, but what are some of your other school experience with either English classes or in being exposed to poetry and deciding like, hey, I think I'll give this a whirl?
I did like it. I remember liking it right away because it was emotional. And I think that I had so many feelings that felt inappropriate. You know how this world makes you feel like feelings are inappropriate when it's basically what makes us. And I remember it being one place where I felt like even if the discussions in the class weren't putting that in the forefront of the conversation, I could feel it. I felt like this is one place where you're given permission or almost expectation to be emotional. And I didn't have that anywhere else in my life. And so I think it was poetry was the first thing that said cry and, you know, feel things.
Award-winning poet Andrea Gibson's latest book is a collection called Lord of the Butterflies. We spoke with them on stage at Boswell Book Company recently, and you can find more of the conversation at WUWM.com.